Radio Influence. The future is now. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence. The only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Off and running on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast this Thursday, March 29th. Let me be the first to wish everyone a happy Easter, as when we convene next, the Easter weekend will have passed us. A lot to get to today. I always say that, don't I? And never can quite get to everything. Want to touch on a few things today. Going to talk about trade charts, how you make trades, draft time around the league, how we break ties on the draft board. Want to get into a couple of other things, how trades overall are made around the league, and kind of go through some of what a scouting report looks like. Got a question to answer here from one of our great listeners. Reminder that you've got a question you want me to ask about anything football related, college football, NFL, you name it. Give us a shout, chris@landryfootball.com. And just hit contact Chris and send it to us, and I'll be glad to address it right here. So I don't know how much of this we're going to get, hopefully get to all of it, but I want to start with a little bit of a discussion, which I've had in passing before, but I like to focus on something to get people a better understanding of it. And it is a question about completion percentage, inaccuracy. We're now in pro days, and what the guy's completion percentage is. Is it important? Is it not important? And, you know, people are, you know, having a field day about, well, this guy says the completion percentage is bad. I don't like this on one player, and a completion percentage is bad on another player. It doesn't matter. Well, that's kind of typical when you're dealing with people that are not scouts, not evaluators. They're just guys that are talking heads on TV. Don't want to constantly be rude, because I think those guys provide a purpose, and gals provide a purpose. It's an entertaining purpose, entertainment only. It is not from a experience level of understanding scouting. What's importance of completion percentage? Well, completion percentage, first of all, you have to understand, is a team offensive statistic. It's how many passes you complete relative to how many passes that you throw. It does not tell you how well the quarterback threw, how well the receiver caught, or how poorly they did it. It doesn't discuss anything about the protections, about anything about the coverage, about anything about the route. You know, if you look at an overall completion percentage, let's just say 60%, just to throw something out. Okay, great, fine. Now tell me about the percentage of routes that were thrown. I don't know. So basically, if you are a team that runs a lot of bubble screens, a lot of screens, period, a lot of short passes, period, your completion percentage is going to be higher than if you're throwing a lot of downfield routes, right? So completion percentage in and of itself doesn't tell you a whole lot. That's like saying I had a great meal tonight. Okay, where, what type of food, you know, I mean, give me some details. Completion percentage doesn't tell you a whole lot. It tells you that if you get to a certain percentage, that's good from a team offensive statistic. You want to complete, you know, 65, 70% of your passes. Awesome is a team offensive statistic, but it doesn't necessarily tell you who played well, who didn't, how things played out. When you evaluate a player in a draft process and a recruiting process, you are evaluating the individual skill sets and the individual stats as broken down on film as it relates to that individual player within a team concept. So I do not concern myself with completion percentage. I concern myself with accuracy percentage. I want to know every route, and I want to break down every route. And I grade accuracy, but chart every throw is what I do. And you break it down within segments of the field and routes. And you can determine what routes were more accurately thrown or where you struggled with. And you're looking at, did the ball come out on time and was the ball thrown where it's supposed to? See, people that are talking about completion percentage, they're just looking at completion percentage numbers. And yes, if you look at statistics that if you have a completion percentage that's below a certain number or above a certain number, it means this. Yes, historically, it's been true, but that is guessing and hoping you're right. Remember, we don't do that. You have to break it down and study it. The game has changed. A lot of shorter routes. So that's going to make the completion percentages go higher and higher, and it's going to contaminate the overall statistics to a certain degree. So what you want to have is a complete route breakdown, and you have to know on each route where you want the ball delivered, when did the ball have to come out, and was it placed where it was supposed to be placed? Simple. It's not basketball where you're looking at field goal percentage and you know the goal is a basket. Have people defending you. But if you're shooting layups, you're shooting 6-8 footers, your completion percentage should be a little different. Or field goal percentage, excuse me, should be higher than long range shots. Now, there are exceptions to that, of course. I'm not going to get into basketball discussions, but if you got a guy, a defender in your face versus a wide open, you know, 28 foot jumper, there's a degree of difficulty that would be maybe switched a little bit in terms of that. In football, we're looking at, did the quarterback deliver the ball on time and accurately? So if it's a quick slant, you want the ball 6 inches in front of the receiver, not in his numbers. So if it's back hip and the receiver catches it, well, that's great. That's a completion. Well, it's great that the receiver caught it, but the quarterback didn't do what you needed him to do, and that's throw it front side shoulder. Why does that matter? Well, it makes the difference between being able to get an angle on the safety or not. So it makes a huge run after catch difference. Really important to understand. Huge difference there. If you got a back shoulder fade, well, the ball has to be back shoulder. If the receiver goes up and catches a 50-50 ball or even a 40-60 ball and comes away with it, great job by the receiver. Great job for you as an offense. Great job for bailing out your quarterback. But on that play, credit goes to the receiver more than the quarterback. Listen, it's a team game, but we're not evaluating the team. You're evaluating the player within a team. So you have to understand that. So accuracy percentage, when you break down, and again, you got to know where the ball needs to be delivered and when. And if you understand that and you don't understand it, first of all, then you're not going to know anything other than whether the ball was completed or not. Anybody can determine whether the ball is completed or not. Well, that's a clear obvious. But where is the ball supposed to be placed? That's important. That's what film breakdown is. That's what you get out of it. So when you look at accuracy percentage, you look at overall accuracy percentage, but it is broken down among routes. So you get a feel for certainly accuracy percentage on shorter routes are going to be easier. What's the accuracy outside the numbers? What are the accuracy down the seam? What are the accuracy on a slant route, an in route, an out route, a corner route, a post corner route, a bang eight, which is a quick post, a go route, a curl, and the length of these routes, or you deliver them accurately. That's the key. And you've got to break it down by route. So then you know when you're done, here's his overall accuracy, but here's where he's really accurate, and here's where he struggles. Well, that's not just, you know, information that is, you just throw out, but it also is helpful to determine, you got to break it down further. Why does he struggle with the bang eight? Why does he struggle with the curl? Why is he good at the back shoulder? You got to understand that. And if you understand that, then you can better able to correct it. See, scouting is not just about whether you want to draft a guy or not, but how are you going to teach him and coach him once you get him there? Where is his strengths? Where is his weaknesses? And how you go about it. So accuracy percentage is important. You're not going to hear that term much. You're going to hear some people talk about something similar to that. But again, always ask yourself, who's breaking down the film? What are their qualifications before you absorb the information and you take it as something that's relevant or not? So is completion percentage important? Landry did not say completion percentage is not important. Oh, it's very important. You want to complete the football is at a higher rate, as you can. But that's overall team offense. And when you break down to your team, let's say you're not evaluating an individual player, but you're evaluating your own team. If you're completing a certain percentage, you're still studying where you're completing the routes, against what coverage is it being completed. Another big factor. It helps you. Maybe the receiver is not doing a very good job and you've got to correct some things there. Maybe it's the back that's affecting it. Maybe it's affected due to the quarterback trying to get rid of the football too quickly in the face of pass rush. You've got protection issues. A lot of things go into it. Football's a lot of moving parts. So the only way to figure out is to break down all the moving parts in its simplicity and in its individualism and then be able to put it all together again. That's the key to finding out where the weaknesses are, where the strengths are, and how do you improve upon them. So completion percentage is important, but as it relates to just you want to complete a lot of passes, you want to do it as a group, but you got to know as a team where you're having success and not take it for granted. But we could even be better if we improved protections, if we lose running backs release out of the backfield, if we improve the receiver's stemming of the routes, if we improve quarterback's anticipation, then how do you improve his anticipation? You break that down. You get it even further. That's the pure element of how you go about and evaluate and teach. But you've got to always go back and understand the true meaning. So hope that gives you a better feel for accuracy percentage versus completion percentage. As it relates to that, I want to talk a little bit about how do we break ties when evaluating a player. You've got players on your board with the same grade. You've heard me talk about grading scales. By now, you know, grading scale that we use. It's used around the league a lot now. Some have different numbers. They mean, you know, kind of similar things, but different numbers. You know what a 7470 is. You know what a 6965 is. You know what a 6460 is, so on and so forth. You get there and you got, let's say, four or five guys that are safeties or four or five quarterbacks or, you know, whatever the case may be at 5-5 grades. How do you separate them? How do you make that determination? Okay, you all got 5-5 grades, so just flip a coin? Of course not. You've got a formula in which you're going to go by and figure that out, correct? So you've got to be able to come up with and look at the critical factor. And you've got to, you know what the critical factors are at each position. You should know that by now because I've got them up on the website. We've got every position there. And so you look at those critical factors and you say, well, what's the deal here? How do we separate these guys? Well, what you do is you take the most important critical factors in a player's evaluation. If you're, let's just go back and let's take a look, for example, let's take receivers. Okay, you're looking at the critical factors. You're looking at the things that are most important in a receiver. You've got the overall same grade. That's fine. You'll look at things. You'll look at what's most important in a receiver. Well, hands, the ability to catch outside the frame, release quickness, separation quickness, route running, you know, toughness, run after catch, production, learning, body adjustment. You've got all those critical factors. So you rank them. You got, you know, speed's very high, of course. So you rank them. You got 14 critical factors. Hands are the most important. You put a weighted score. You put 14 in that column. Then release quickness, 13. Separation quickness, 12. Route running, 11. Speed, 10. Toughness, 9. All the way down to blocking, 1. So that's the most important in order of the critical factors for that position of receiver. For quarterbacks, it'd be intelligence, mental decision-making. Second, vision. Third, competitiveness. Fourth, accuracy. Fifth, toughness. And character, work ethic. Put them in order. Now you take, this is why we do this, on each individual scouting report, we've got massive amounts of details. We'll get into that either later today or another day on how the scouting report looks. But in one of those areas we've talked about, in each and every one of these critical factors, you have to put a grade to identify the quality level of that skill set. And so a numerical grade, and you've got to put verbiage to support that. So if you're talking about a receiver's hands, you've got to describe his hands. Big, soft, naturally catches the football. You see it when he runs the slant route, catches the football out of frame, back shoulder fade. He has the ability to reach and grab with great catching radius, but the ability to catch the football smoothly. Don't see the double catches. You're describing it. And remember, you got to put a number on it. The grading criteria, which I have up on the website as well, does he have 7-4 hands, which is super elite? 7-0 hands, which are outstanding? Okay, and what is super elite to outstanding? This is the player performs the skill without abnormal or extra effort and with consistency. Doesn't do it most of the time. He does it pretty much all the time. He's exciting, rare, consistent, plays with flair, with not a noticeable weakness and against all competition level. If he catches the football, forget all the other stuff right now. If he just catches the football, does he do it in a super elite category, outstanding category? Maybe not quite in that area. Maybe he's great to very good. What's great to very good? That's 6'9 to 6'5, but what does it mean? The player performs without abnormal or extra effort, but does not do it all the time. That's the distinction. He lacks some consistency in performing the skill. He is exciting, rare, with no noticeable weakness. It's just that he doesn't do it as consistently as the seventh. So, if he's in that category, would you classify him as a 6'9 great or a 6'5 very good? You got to make that distinction, and you've got to describe again those catching features that you see on film that are going to, that what took you to give him a 6'9 or a 6'5 or a 7'0 or a 7'4 or a good to average 6'4 to 6'0. Player performs the ability with some abnormal or extra effort and does it more often than not, though not as consistent as the 6'9 and 6'5s. So now you got a feel and you go on to the next level and the next all the way to the rejects. But you're talking about one category of a position. So you're grading the hands and you're putting the number. So you put the number, let's say you've got of the, let's say you got five receivers with 5-5 grades. Of the five receivers, you've got one of them with a 6-9 grade, two of them with a 6-5 grade, two of them with a 6-4 grade. You put that weighted score. Okay, here's the guys that rank highest in the most important category. Then you go to release quickness, then separation quickness, then and do the same thing all the way through to the 14 categories. Then you've got a weighted score. So then you see, based upon all the important critical factors of the position, here's how they're graded in the most important areas. And then that's your tiebreaker. He's better at the most important areas. That's who you want. If you end up with a tie grade after that, then you simply look and say, look, this guy has slightly better hands, release quickness, and separation quickness. You can look at things, of course. Big factor in this is the critical factors are size. You got two guys, they're receivers. Both of them have the same qualities. One of them 6'2", 210, and another one is 5'11", 185. And they can do the same thing, which is very unlikely that they're the same type of athlete. You take the bigger guy. Normally what you get is a bigger guy is going to have a different skill set, different body set, a different athletic traits than the smaller guy. It should be separated by the critical factors in a weighted score, and then that gets your separation. And after that, here's how you got those five players graded, A, B, C, D, and E. And so now you still have them at 5-5, but you got them stacked in the right order. Really important. If you get time, if you get to a point where you've got to make that decision, you want to have your decision already pre-made and discussed. There's no reason on draft day to say, I'm going to take the guy, I'm going to take C. Well, what the hell have you done all year long in your preparation process? You need to get it organized, and this is where you've got to be very organized as a leader, because what will happen at times, you have the weasel factor. Okay, and I'm going to tell you what a weasel factor is. You got maybe the coach or the area scout that's just not in a meeting. He's not going to say a whole lot. He's going to just whatever goes, goes. But then he's going to go around to the head coach under the GM and say, no, I really think this guy is better. And they don't want to say it in front of everybody else. Just those guys are really no use. This is a team. It's a family. You got to air everything out. You don't want to have the position coach say, no, I really want this guy. You need to say it in front of everybody and explain why. Because you know what? They need to hear it. You might be right. And we all need to understand it and be on the same page. So when you set those players in that 5-5 grade or the 6-5 grade or whatever the case may be, and you got five guys, they need to be in the right order. And they need to be in the right order when you close that draft board up prior to draft day. You come in on draft day, there should not be any changes, barring any last-minute catastrophe of character or medical that would change it, or God forbid, worst. Had a player one time that literally died in a plane crash 2 days prior to the draft. Obviously, you know, something that we don't, it was a lower rounded player. You might remember him. It was Brooke Behringer. He was a quarterback at Nebraska. And he was a guy we graded in a 4.9 priority free agent. And of course, you kid like that, you take off the board. And we had a player, you know, die kid that I like, Brandon Burlesworth out of Arkansas, went to the Colts and died after the draft. I never even signed the contract. But anyway, don't want to get morbid here, but basically your decisions need to get made prior to. So breaking ties on the draft board, really important. And this gets done in your draft meetings, and you do it by position. Breaking ties on your horizontal board gets a little trickier. I'm going to get into that a little later, but a little tip. You got to look at the priority of the position. Quarterbacks, pass rushers, people that can score touchdowns are a little bit higher priority than other positions. So all else is equal, you kind of know who you're going to rank a little bit higher. Now, need doesn't make you a better player, but it does make you a better pick. If the grades are equal, you take that position of need. But you also need to factor in other than need is need throughout the draft. You've got greater depth at receiver or running back or safety in the fourth or fifth round, and you're in the second round, and you just don't see there's going to be much depth at defensive tackle or linebacker. Well, then the tiebreaker for you on your horizontal board may be to take the linebacker or, you know, the defensive tackle in the second round, knowing that you've got a better chance of filling that need in the fourth round at another spot than you would at this spot. Those are tiebreakers, but you don't want to reach and take a lower-level player. We've gone through that before. I want to talk a little bit about trade charts, and I want to talk a little bit about what it really means and how people come to it and what people tend to say about it, and you got to do this, and this wasn't a really good move, and so on and so forth. I've said this again before in passing, but I want to spend a little time on it. Trade charts were started a long time ago. I was in the league and did some trade charts myself. The most famous, the most publicized is the Jimmy Johnson trade chart, which basically wasn't done by Jimmy Johnson. It was done by somebody in their department that assigned worth to every pick in terms of numbers. It's a good theory, okay? And it's a good way to put numbers towards what the value is. So if you look on the internet, you're going to see a bunch of different charts, probably similar. Some may adjust. First pick in the draft is worth 3,000 points. The last pick in the draft is worth 1 or 2 points. So if you move up, the second pick in the draft is worth 2,600 points. Go from 2 to 1, that's a 400-point difference. 400 points, that's second-round value. So you need a second round for it. Folks, let me explain something to you. Those are numbers, and those numbers are great, but the numbers are not what's important. The draft slot represents a position in which you're going to draft a player. So when you talk about the first pick of the draft, the fifth pick of the draft, the 10th pick, the 220th pick, it's all represents a player that you could get with that spot So it's important to understand that trade charts, if done accurately, I did them every year for us. I did our trade charts. Bill Belichick, I did them for us in Houston and in Nashville. And two things that you have to do with it. The numbers are fine. But what I did was I took every trade that took place between draft picks. I also charted every trade that I was involved in discussing, and as an organization that we were involved in discussing, that never got made. And I factored in value. Okay, they wanted this for this, and I charted it. So basically, I can look at every trade at a glance and see what was made and what was in return and what they got. Okay, it's just a, you know, you look at it and you see in the past, here's what trades have been made and have been done. I call it a blue book value of trade charts. It's fine. Blue book value is a good concept. But what is the blue book value, folks? There's no generic cost of a 2015 car. No such thing, right? Is it a Lexus? Is it a Corolla? Is it a, you know, whatever, a Ford truck? They're different types of cars. Well, guess what? They're different types of players that you select with the first pick, the fifth pick, the 10th pick. So by taking the past trades and by looking at numbers, I look at the value of each pick. But the value of each pick in every draft is all relative to the players within that draft. You have to take your trade chart and you have to marry it up to your draft board. If your draft board says, I got two players with a 7-0 grade, I've got two players with a 6-9 grade, and those are the highest graded players in the draft, then there's a drop down to the 6-5, and then I've got 12 players graded at 6-5. Well, what does that tell you? Off the top of your head, that the first and second picks in a given draft based on value on your board are going to be ranked, are going to be worth more, close to one another, probably closer than one another than 400 points. They're going to be virtually the same grade. You might want to give 3,000 to one player and, you know, 29.50 to the other. I mean, it's very close. If one of those players or a player that is at a position you wouldn't want to take, like guard, maybe adjust it. Again, the value of the pick is directly correlated to the player that you would take with that pick. So, got two players with 7-0 grades. The first two picks are going to be worth point-wise a lot. And then there's going to be a slight drop, and then there's going to be the next two picks, 3-4, that are going to be really close. Then there's a drop, and then 5 through 18 are going to be virtually the same in some order. There are going to be point differentials, but they're going to be close point differentials because you're saying the players are a lot more equal. So the point of this exercise is to now put a point value for every pick based upon the players that are there. And guess what? You're not done, because when the draft starts, players come off the board, right? Well, if players that you think, let's say you've got a player ranked as the fourth best player in the draft, and you're at pick 16, and that number four player is available because you got them rated higher, you like them, other people don't like them as much. Guess what? To go from 16 to 14, you're not going to pay the normal jump from 16 to 14, because in my board right now, 16 to 14 would be hardly not much of a jump, not much worth. Why? Because the assumption is the top four players are going to already be gone. Guess what? One of those four are still there. guess what? You're going to move up two spots. Trust me. You're going to give up more than the point chart value is when you started. That pick, that 14th selection now, is not a number. It represents a player you've got ranked number four on your board. So you're going to pay a heftier price. You're going to negotiate, of course, get the best deal that you can, but you're going to pay a heftier price than just two spots on a slot to go and get a player that you got ranked fourth on your board. It's all rooted in the evaluation. Okay? Understand it. You're going to do what it takes to get your guy. Now, by the same token, the opposite applies. You think that a certain pick slot is worth a certain amount. Your draft board is picked clean. Therefore, what you thought would have been value to move down, you might take less than value because you want to get out of that pick. I mean, you might want a third round pick, but you're going to take a fourth round pick and be happy with it because at least you're getting something because you're going to move down, get the same value player at your move down position. Because what? The numbers tell you that one of those guys are going to be there and you pick up an extra fourth. It's what we did when I moved down. We had a plan in place. We liked Eddie George. We're going to draft him. We had other options. We moved down. We felt we could get him, but we felt we had other options that we were happy with when we moved down. We got a fourth round pick to move down. It moved down to 16. We decided from 9. We moved, decided to secure at a certain point to move up from 16 to 14 to secure drafting Eddie. And then with the fourth round pick that we got from the Raiders for moving all the way down, we got John Runyon, who's a Pro Bowl tackle in his own right. So again, the value of the selection is going to change year to year and is going to change within the draft because the players are going to come off the board, and they don't always come off in the order that you think. So players that you thought would have been gone are still there. Picks more, much more valuable then, or less valuable if the board is picked clean. So keep in mind how that it plays out. Want to get to, we're going to talk a little bit about categories on a scouting report. We're going to do that probably Tuesday. We're going to get into a little bit more about how trades take place. I want to spend a little time talking about answering a question. We always like to answer questions. Remind you again, if you have a question that you want to address here on LandryFootball.com, Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com, please sure to address them. Anything about your team, college football, NFL, whatever. Remember to check out LandryFootball.com. What a great discount we are very proud of. Folks, if you join us now, short time only, you get the rest of free agents in the draft, and you get the entire football season virtually free because we're discounting at 50%. So as we get into the breakdowns of the rosters in the offseason through the summer, get you ready for the football season. You'll be set through all the season, all the film breakdowns, all the way through next year at this time. Best discount we have. Take advantage of it. We think you will love it. We got this question from a Saints fan. Thanks for the nice compliments on the website. Appreciate you being a member. Question about the Saints and their possibilities at 27. I'm going to tell you, again, and I know that's what, who's going to be there? What are they going to do? How's it going to play out? All those things are interesting. But the reality is we don't really know who's going to be there. Keep in mind, to answer this question, that as I mentioned, they're 18 first-round grades. Let's take the Saints, for example. They've got the 27th pick. Assumption is all those 18 grades, guys, all these guys, 18 first round grades are going to be gone. Very possibly. But let me tell you what history tells me. there's going to be one or two of those guys still left. So when you try to forecast who they're going to take, what do you always do? Well, they need this. And you look at some list on a website and you say, this makes the most sense. They need this. They need a tight end. Best tight end. Folks, don't get locked into that thinking. There's going to be a better player there, and it may not be at that position. It may be at another position, greater value. And remember, the 18 guys I've got with first-round grades, there may be four or five guys that will differ between team to team. So keep that in mind. Don't get locked into thinking. He was throwing out the possibility of Rashawn Evans or Vander Esch at linebacker. Well, again, Kurt, go back and study the draft charts. Okay, you're talking about two different types of players now. You're talking about Rashawn Evans as a top 10 player in the draft. I doubt he'll be there. If he's there, it's not a Rashawn Evans or Vander Esch. You're talking about a completely different look. You're talking about a 6'5 grade versus a 6'4. Now, that doesn't sound like much. Again, go study the draft chart. It'll tell you 6'5 is a different caliber player than 6'4. Vander Esch, be a good player. And if you're 18, your first round grades are gone and you're picking second round value, it'd be a consideration. But there's no Evans or Vander Esch. It's Evans if for some unguided reason he's still there. He asked about Daron Payne. Well, Daron Payne, again, is definitely a guy you take because he's a higher graded player. Now, he asked me about offense, and he asked about Chark, obviously someone that follows LSU. DJ Chark's a third round value. So you don't take somebody like that at 27. Okay. Somebody else might, that's fine. DJ Chark is not any higher than that. And there are plenty of, if you want to go receiver, there's plenty of options. So he's not a second round graded guy. May go there, but more third round value. Good player though, and wouldn't be shocked if somebody sees him as a second round guy and takes him there. Likes the tight ends. No, that's a need for the Saints. Where would they go at tight end? Well, first of all, again, not a first-round graded tight end there. So let's go under the assumption that the first-round boards are picked clean. Then you got to look at who's best available amongst a number of positions. Look, I think that a tight end, a guy like a Hayden Hurst, would make some sense. But I want to see who else is on the board. If Harold Landry of Boston College is still on the board, I don't care. I'm taking a guy like that. Even if I'm, you know, I mean, there is, that's a guy that is a high second round value, that 23rd player on a board. That's a much better player, and you take him. If you want to go receiver, again, you want to get the style of guy. There are a number of different options you can go. So don't get locked into the tight ends. I know that's a big need. Hurst would be a value. You mentioned Gesicki. Like Gesicki, he's more of a high third-round value, but because he's the fourth-graded tight end, he's definitely going to go in the second round. But again, you're getting a third-round value. Hayden Hurst of South Carolina, Dallas Goedert of South Dakota State, Mark Andrews of Oklahoma, along with Gesicki, makes some sense, but they would be reaches taken at 27. And Gesicki is not in the top of that group. He'd be at the bottom of that four group. He'd be a 5'9 if you look at the board and check that out. I'm surprised if you're a member, you would probably look at the tight end board and see that. So you might want to check that out. He's a really good athlete, really good receiver. Most of these guys fit that category. We've got the scouting reports on these guys, so you can check them out as well. There are a lot of good players in this draft, and managing where you want to go, and with you're picking 27, you're looking at a number of options. You're looking at guys that think have value. You don't know if they're going to be there. Drafting another young offensive tackle, not out of the question. McGlinchey were to slip there out of Notre Dame, you bet they'd consider it. Colton Miller, you bet they'd consider it. Connor Williams, you bet they'd consider it. You know, there are some quality defensive backs. Again, the order I would put them is, you can go and look up on the website. You'll see the difference in terms of how I've got guys graded and the priority of the positions, just in terms of the importance of the positions as relates to making impact. There's some good players. Now, the top of that second round group are quarterbacks like Mayfield and Allen and Jackson. Well, I expect all those guys to be long gone because that's a position that's overvalued. So then you get to the Harold Landry, the Sam Hubbard, the Calvin Ridley, the Christian Kirks, the Vander Esches of Boise, the Lorenzo Carters, guys like that. So there's some good options, but remember this. History tells me, 30 years tells me, there's going to be a player among the Saints' top 15 on their board that's going to be available at 27. I can pretty much guarantee it without guaranteeing it. And here's why I tell you that and explain it this way. Your boards look different than every other boards. I can remember the year that I drafted Keith Bullock at 31. When I did my research, I felt like there were going to be one of two players available at 31, either Bullock or Chris Hovan. And both were in our top 18 players. And I knew by numbers, one player was going to be left for us at 31. Now, we were prepared if both were gone, but obviously we jumped all over Keith Bullock and was a great player for us. But the point is don't get locked in as a fan of a team. In your case, as a Saints fan, oh, if you don't take a tight end, you don't take a receiver, it might be a really good tackle. It may be a defensive end type. And I'm not saying Harold Landry is going to be there. In fact, I don't think he will be there at 27. There's going to be a good player that slips, so keep that in mind. We're running a little long today. Didn't have time to get into the categories of a scouting report. We're going to get into more of this stuff. Hey, you've got some ideas, things that you want to know, things that you find interesting. I try to anticipate what you might be interested in, but I need it from you. What do you find interesting? What do you want me to address in the world of football? We'll do that. We're going to get into some officiating stuff. We're going to get into some of the rule changes stuff, and we're probably going to do that on Tuesday. I know it's a little bit more timely today, but wanted to get in some stuff, obviously related to the draft. But I think some of the officiating stuff's more for the offseason, so want to do that at some point. But any ideas, send them our way. Remember to check out our great discounts at LandryFootball.com, and we'll join you again. Have a great Easter weekend. Blessed weekend with your family. And we will talk to you Tuesday on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Landry Football. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We in the restaurant industry utilize OpenTable or Reserve or something like that to allow people to make their own reservation. We allot for a certain amount of restaurants or of reservations every single night. It matches up with the tables that we have in the restaurant. As a server or a hostess, you're able to go in, see what your reservations are for the night, be able to be prepared for that. It allows you to handle staffing for the restaurant. It allows you to do budgeting so that you can make sure that you have enough food to handle the reservations that you have coming in, along with the allotted amount of walk-in reservations that you have. It's a brilliant system. I don't care which one you use, OpenTable or Reserve. I'm a big fan of both of them.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.